Alright, time for another DraftPhysics.com video presentation. To the future, probably. The only people that will be paying attention. Yeah. So, the motor force, some more of that. Interesting subject, frankly. There's so much, the answer is probably going to be something really simple. It always turns out that way. The physics is simple. Small universes running on many fewer rules, many fewer objects. Okay, so there just isn't room for a bunch of shenanigans. Anyway, so a comment sort of on the subject. I don't know, maybe I'll go to a preface statement first, so draw something first. So I was thinking about it, as I do, and realized that, there's two things that are a little curious. First, doing the experiments like cloud chambers without one of the magnetic fields, instead of having it in a magnetic field, have it just one side of the field. So I don't know exactly how they put a magnetic field in the cloud chamber and then photograph the stuff and all that. So maybe they're only using one magnetic field. I don't know. I'm not sure. I have to look into it, I suppose. But looking into anything is frustrating because you can't find anything. So anyway, but I was just thinking, okay, so you have this idea of the Faraday motor force, okay, magnetic pole here, and swirls around and around and around the wire. And the idea of north, south, and then you have a wire in here, and you put wire, electricity in one way, it shoots this way, you put it in the other way, it goes the other way. And you could take away one of those poles, and you just basically have the Faraday experiment. And I just haven't seen it done that way. And it'd be interesting to know, is it twice the torque? I mean, what exactly is the torque on the wire? I've never seen anybody ever measure it. Have a little device on the wire and measure how much pressure the wire actually moves with versus how much wattage you're putting into the wire and how strong the magnetic field is and all of that. I've never seen anything that actually does any quantitative analysis. So you're just sort of left with this ambiguous idea. But the irony is, right? So I've heard it called the motor force, okay? this idea of going around. But motors don't use it, which is the funny part, right? So a motor is more like, the idea is you're just basically, use coils of wire inside the motor to create a north and a south. And then you have a north and a south configuration, set up, in the outside of the motor, the armature. So you're just basically saying north, south, or south, north, south, north. You're just basically repelling the magnet through. Like this would be a south pole, and it would repel the south pole. The south pole would move here, and you're just pushing it with opposing magnetic fields, or attracting magnetic fields. Obviously, the other one would attract while one was opposing. And so you're using opposing and attracting fields. You're not doing motor force. So the motor force isn't strong enough, apparently, to be of any utility in actually making a motor, because all the motors I think exist are all doing this repulsive field thing. They're not doing some kind of churning around thing. So it's not the same force. Motors aren't using the same force, is the point. It doesn't appear. Even the Tesla-style phased motor is still relying on opposing and attracting magnetic fields, not this swirly crap. In the cloud chamber, this thing. So it is kind of confusing. And then I was thinking about the cloud chambers and all the other experiments, and then you have this Helmholtz coil thing, where they get electrons to spin around in a circle, okay, inside of a field. And they say they're electrons, So it's the old catch, they have this electron gun thing, okay, which really is atomizing. It's basically breaking atoms into pieces and shooting them. It's heat, okay? They heat a piece of metal. The metal radiates bits. Now, some of the bits might be electrons, but there's also all kinds of ions and other nuclear bits that are flying out of the emitter. And so there's room for doubt whether you're actually seeing an electron or you're seeing something else. I'd say there's doubt. They don't really, like I said, they don't do the experiments deep enough, for it to be proven one way or the other whether you're cheating a little. So like in the cloud chamber, it really could be argued that the atoms, are, when an electron hits an atom, it's deflecting to the right, right-hand rule. And it hits another atom, and it deflects a little more to the right. And so the spiral is being created because the atoms are imposing the change in the direction, not the electron. So the electron's traveling straight in, like in a least line. It's not really doing the... it's by itself not causing the effect. So that got me also thinking, well, what if it is? How could it possibly? So you have something as simple as just a plain electron flying through space, and you have to argue, it's hitting more energy this way. That's why it's dragging to a halt. That's why the electron fails to keep going, is because even in empty space, electrons can't keep going. You can't throw an electron to the moon and get it there, because it's going to run out of capacity to keep going, because it's basically breaking a field rule that you can't move into the field without being dragged to a halt, unless you have an engine, unless you have a little motor that keeps you going upstream. The motor would be effectively having more than one electron, and having pressure between them, and the pressure between them keeps compensating for the drag. But anyway, it's not getting into that. That's a, it's an important subject, but it's so still complicated. Until you get the really, the really hard lines you can draw about the truth, it all stays a little mushy and complicated. But anyway, so the electron's moving into that field, and you're saying that the natural state of the electron is to be a perfect charge, in the sense that it radiates the same stuff everywhere. And I guess the idea would be, when it's moving, what's changing is that it radiates more in this direction and in this direction than it radiates in the other directions, because of it's moving into the field. And so there's the reflections off the electron of this extra energy you're hitting, the reflections aren't perfect reflections. They're deflections based on the fact that you are moving into that field, and so the reflections are not coming off perfectly straight. And so the higher the speed of the electron, the more the radiation would be reflecting perpendicular. Now the problem with that is the speed argument would be a pressure argument, and this happens with low voltages, not high voltages, so that's another trick to it. But they are high voltages in cloud, in the places where we see the electrons by themselves moving, not being moved by not being moved by an atmosphere, a place where there is a medium. Maybe it's still, maybe that's viable, I don't know. So again, this completely draft video, just pointing out all the little bits you're trying to put together into a coherent picture. So then I'll read this guy's comment, which, you know, thank you for contributing, but I don't think you can do it in text, frankly, because it does take all these pieces you got to put together. It's got to be somewhere you got to model this stuff. You can't just, you know, attempt to describe all the, you know, mechanics in text is really challenging. And to do it in two paragraphs, I think is really totally fail. But anyway, yeah, so I guess I'll get to the point I want to make when he gets to the point. Because a lot of physics is doing this. They're trying to turn electrons into dipoles. And I don't see how you can possibly do that. How you can possibly turn it into a little, you know, polarized magnet or something. Because then it's not going to do what it's supposed to be doing inside the atom. It's not going to do what it's supposed to be doing in all the charge circumstances, which is just behave as a negative charge. It can't be a north side magnet, so to speak, and then, you know, it can't be a monopole and a dipole. So you really do have to make up your mind, commit to one or the other. So I think those are always kind of fail arguments. They can't, you know, it's not very constructive, I guess I would say. Something like that. All right, so he says, if magnetism was the cause for the spirals in the cloud chamber, well, obviously, the magnetic field is one of the causes. So you have an effect spinning to its death electron. Now, I would argue the simple explanation for the spiral is the fact that the electron is losing energy, which each interaction it's having, not only with the vapor in the cloud chamber, but the fact that electrons just run out of gas. Okay, they drag to a halt. So it's the same force, but the velocity is declining. So if you can't keep the same velocity, then it spirals to its death. And so it's just the same turning force, but you're turning something moving slower, which means it's going to end up turning more. Okay, so, you know, anyway. The best way it could be produced is if the objects that are moving in a straight line generates a magnetic field around themselves. So you can't generate a magnetic field, you know, north, south, unless you're a dipole, in my opinion. So, you know, that's a little hard. Let's say the electron did start to, let's say when an electron is moving, let's say, okay, that it does deflect unevenly. That would mean it's polarized in the sense that obviously more energy is going one way than it's going another way, which is a kind of polarization. But it's not a north-south polarization. It's a, you know, something-nothing polarization. It's, you know, it's charge and absence of charge, which is different than, you know, plus and minus. Okay. So I'm just saying that's a nuance that's sort of important. Let's see, that are moving in a straight line generate a magnetic field around themselves like the magnetic field around a conducting wire. So again, the magnetic field around a conducting wire is another one of these, you know, I would argue you've been deceived. Okay, the round part, the circle around the wire is what iron filings do. It's what dipoles do in the field. Compasses are dipoles. You put compasses in the field and they point a certain way. So it's not actually the energy. The energy isn't moving on that line at all. The energy is going this way, okay? And it's causing that alignment because this is a dipole field. The electricity going through the wire has created a field that the magnets sense, and their plus and minus line up consistent, you know, the magnets line up consistent with an opposite to whatever the field is it's creating. So it's just like the iron filings around a magnet. Nothing is on those lines. Those lines are arbitrary. I make really thick iron filings, the lines will be in a different place than if I make really tiny iron filings. The iron filings are lining up because they're becoming opposing magnets. They're all the original magnets north-south. All the iron filings are lining up south-north, south-north, south-north. And they're opposing each other. So when they stick together, they stick with their north tails hitting the north, you know, the north side of one magnet's hitting the south side of the other magnet, then the next one's lining up. They're lining up unevenly so they can stick to each other. And then that whole collection of iron filings is now a magnet, and it's reflecting, it's pushing away all the other magnets because all the other magnets are the same orientation as it is. So those lines, those field lines are not they can be any place. They're just a place where you've established an equality, okay, in terms of the field force, the radiation coming off the magnet. So the real lines of force are not circular, or they're not a path. I mean, if the sun could produce a magnetic field, like if the light was blue coming off the bottom of the sun and red coming off the top, you would sort of get what I'm saying, is that there'd be some red mixing with the blue over here, and there'd be all red at this point, and so anything that could detect blue and red would line up, you know, attractive rather than repulsive. So it would first flip to the right position and then move in. And the reason why you see iron filings is because they create some mechanism to stop them from being attracted, to stop them from flipping and moving into the other magnet. Well, they have already flipped. They are the opposite magnetic field. So they want to move right into the magnet, and they can't because you put a piece of paper in the way. All right. The conducting wire. I realized this wouldn't work because some of the spirals are moving perpendicular and away from the magnetic field. Ooh. Yeah. So, see, that's where it gets a little tricky. Perpendicular and away from the magnetic field. So, what we don't see, though, is spirals at angles in cloud chambers. So you always see a pretty perfect spiral. That is, it's the plane of the magnetic field. It seems kind of obvious that the spirals all happen in the same plane. They don't happen at angles. It's not like galaxies out in space, you know, where some are this way and some are this way, and that, you know. No. The path the spirals take are linear straight. There are pancakes, yes. If it was following the magnetic field around the object moving straight, the path of the spirals would be curved in the shape of a ring. I think you're still, you're arguing as if the electron wasn't losing energy. And I'm just saying it's clear it's losing energy, and there's two reasons why you could say it's losing energy. So even if you went with one reason, it's in a cloud chamber and it's hitting a bunch of stuff, and it has to lose energy because it's hitting a bunch of stuff. So that's why it's not a ring, is because it keeps losing energy as it's turning, right? All right, this would bending a cone-shaped object into a ring. So again, it's there's no ring in the first place that's an actual pathway of any kind, and I'd argue, because that's just the way compasses line up. It isn't the way anything travels, but the cones form from the spirals, don't seem to take curved paths. Cones created by the spirals. I'm not quite sure what you're saying. So, can't really say much on that. All right. So, to comment, thank you. yeah. Just don't know if I can make much out of it. Somebody left a comment on the, you know, like I said, go there. Just, I'll be back. All right. Well, so here's another comment, but it's, you know, it's an argument against relativity, which, you know, I like, but this is just no way to make an argument, okay? Just all this mush. Sorry, it is kind of mushy. And it's redundant, and it's just declarations, and, you know, and he actually has it on his website, and you can't, you know, it's read by the computer. I mean, it's just the same text read by a computer. I mean, it's pretty pathetic, frankly. All right, so I'll just read the first line here. Just because the light images from planet Mars are assumed to take 20 minutes to reach Earth, so again, these aren't assumptions anymore, does not mean that Martians have traveled, see, this is just, there's no Martians, into another space-time dimension where the stars, planets, and galaxies are in different locations from Earth. Guess I would agree that it doesn't, but I don't think they're arguing that. So that's sort of a straw man. Time and distance cannot be relative to each other. Of course they can. Everything is in a relative condition. I'm moving. It's just a fact. I think I'm stationary, but I'm moving in absolute space, in actual directions. Every second, I'm moving a different place in the universe. My direction is constantly changing because there's a bunch of things interacting with me. But the fact is that everything else in the room is under the same conditions, and it will encounter the same changes in the force and the same changes, and they'll move with me. And I can make things move away from me or towards me by adding or subtracting a force. So yes, everything is relative, but it's relative in an absolute universe. The twin paradox, for example, just sort of illustrates you can create a bunch of different relative motions, but the fact is one thing has to do the extra moving. All right, and to have any time dilation, blah, 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 blah. Anyway, other objects in space-time as that would violate the laws of conservation of energy. So, again, those are just kind of a vague argument. You know, so you're leaving out all the argument that would establish that it's a violation of the conservation of energy, and you're just saying it. And it's not good enough, frankly. In the context of making these arguments, you got to go further than that. Can't just make declarations. Travel distance requires potential energy. So this is all mush talk now. Potential and kinetic, I mean, this is all baby talk. There's just energy, okay? It's not, gravity isn't potential energy. Gravity is an actual energy stream, and you can tap the actual energy stream. But there is no such thing as potential energy or kinetic energy. There's just energy. And it's either stored somewhere where you can tap it, or it's in a condition that you can tap, right? You either have it stored in something where it's running around in circles like a battery and you can get it out, or it's flowing like gravity and you can stick your finger in it. Oy. An observer can have no effect on the moving object's kinetic energy. Relativity debunked. So again, this is just, This isn't how you debunk. This isn't, you're required to do a little more work than that. And so the rest of this is just him doing this over and over again. I mean, you know, when people are making these lame comparisons, well, they say the speed of light is 186,000 miles per second, then it's 186,264,432 miles a second. I mean, you know, you're going to start, you know, splitting those hairs. You just make yourself look desperate and bullshit. I mean, those kinds of distinctions, you know, oh, they measured it differently. Yes, of course, it's difficult to measure. So what? You know, you're just playing games. All right, anyway. So, yeah, I don't think I'm really going to bother responding to all this. I don't know if there's anything in here that's actually a good argument. So even though I agree that, you know, relativity in any kind of absolute sense, that everything is absolutely relative and there is no real absolute universe, I'm going to say is bullshit. The universe is not, there is no breaking of, you know, two simultaneous actions that happen in the universe are in fact simultaneous. They happen at the same time because there's time everywhere in the universe. The same clock is ticking for everything. And the fact that somebody perceives the two things differently doesn't change the facts at all. You know, doesn't change the absolute universe at all. So anyway, blah, 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 blah. See, he keeps mentioning 186,000 miles per, you know, who cares? Speed of light, you know, speed of force. You really think you're going to make an argument out of it? See, he mentions it again, 186,000 miles. Yeah, 186,000 miles per, he just keeps doing the same shit over and over. That's not useful. All right. So that's really not connected to the current subject, so, yeah. That's also a good reason, I guess, not to bother with it at this time. It's just another part of the story is all the, you know, you have the regular physics, which is the subjects like magnetism, kinetic energy, all the, you know, the things that are supposed to be a little more solid, and then you have the theoretical crapola. And I haven't spent much time arguing the theoretical crapola because it is such crap. I mean, they really don't have any evidence. And you'd say, like, entanglement is right in between the two. You know, because the evidence sucks in terms of the experiments aren't what they say they are. You know, they're much more complicated than how they describe them. And all the assumptions built into them are, in a sense, just ridiculous. So, you know. Is it really worth going through all the arguments about each part of their mechanism for detecting, you know, and pointing out how it can't work that way? It's almost like arguing the interferometer, right? When they won't even explain to you how they could be equal beams of light when one of the beams of light is now spreading and the other one isn't. You know, their own physics says it has to happen that way. They can't be equal beams because they're not doing the same thing. They're not in the same configuration. But anyway, till the next time, really. I mean, the whole wave theory is just crap. I mean, waves are just an appearance. There's no real thing called a wave. It's not a real thing. It's always made out of stuff doing something completely different. Okay, I mean, water is doing this and this and this and this and this and this. I mean, it's not waving anywhere. Anyway. So I'll just call this a video and we'll move on and see where we go and see what, you know, we have to. Obviously, we have to find somebody capable of countering or adding value to this conversation. And there's just no one capable of doing that so far. No one's capable of drawing a lever and explaining how it works. No one's capable of drawing a motor and explaining. And no one's capable of doing any of this. And, damn, that sucks. Countering any of the arguments I have made. No one's capable of doing it in a form that's at all comparable to what I have presented. All right, anyway. So, yeah, enough. So, well, call it a video. So this has been a draftphysics.com, debatephysics.com also, but nobody can participate in the thing called the debate. Just can't. Can't find anybody, can't pay anybody, can't do anything to get anything happening. So I have to do it all, I guess. I guess I really just have to start trying to make their arguments for them But I don't think I could imitate them without making them look ridiculous. All right, anyway. So, till the next time and such and so forth and whatnot.